Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 through 12. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
Blessed are the meek,
for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. And friends, this is the word of the Lord. In a moment, we'll get the PowerPoint up. I'd start, but the first picture, I need the first picture. All right, that's good. Thank you. So apparently, I was trying to pay attention to news in Edmonton, though I asked my high schoolers this morning, have you guys heard about the proposed project to put a gondola across the North Saskatchewan River? And they had not heard of it, so I'm feeling pretty good about myself right now. I know about this project. So apparently, it'll be privately funded, right? So we don't have to pay extra taxes, so they say, right? But this is a project that's proposed, or has been, it's being talked about, and it will run from Old Strathcona, which sits on the south side of the River Valley, and it's supposed to cross the River Valley and end up at the Shaw Conference Center. I know that's on the north side, I haven't been there yet. Gondolas are pretty interesting because, well, they're high above the landscape. You run over top of buildings, trees, and waterways, and riding it gives you a different perspective. If you've ever been on one or been on an airplane, you get the same type of perspective, right? You see how the lay of the land, right, the valley meets up with the higher ground, how the roads intersect, how communities intersect, how, you know, infrastructure, you know, intersects with the communities and the lay of the land and so on. It gives you a new perspective. The other thing it does is it shows you where you're going. Once you are above, right, you have no trees. There are no buildings in your blocking your view, and so you can see where you are going. Here in the Beatitudes, in verses 3 through 12, this is what Jesus is doing. He's lifting us up out of the present, our present difficulties and hardships, and shows us where we are headed. He lifts us up out of the present situation where all we can see is what's in front of us, so we can see something different. Okay? So he's lifting us above the fray so we can see where we are headed. This is important to understand. You see, because the blessings that Jesus is talking about, they're not present blessings. These are future blessings. Right? So it has to do with the future. We need to see where we're going. This is what the blessings are. They're about the future. Things that we will enjoy in the future. And what is it then? What does blessed mean? I earlier today when we did the call to worship, it used the word happy. That is one word that is used. But I want to develop it a little bit more. What is this blessedness? What is this happiness that is promised in the future? It's a deep everlasting joy. A deep everlasting happiness and joy. It's an enduring happiness and joy. It's a deep satisfaction with who we are and those around us and what is happening around us. It's a life that is rich in relationships and purpose. And one of the words that is used in the Old Testament to describe this is shalom. Shalom is peace. It's equilibrium. It's when everything is right with the world. Everything is good. Everything is in order. We need this perspective given to us here in Matthew because the world that we live in has a very different view on life and what leads to blessing and what does not lead to blessing. Did I just lose my presentation or... The screen went dead. So in this world, throughout history, right, humanity has sort of defined what brings about blessing and what does not bring blessing. It doesn't matter what country you're a part of. I just want to give you, in the world, this is what we see happening. Let me back up. I got a little ahead of myself there. Can we just turn this off? Can we turn it off? It's confusing. Dave, can you help? Or Scott, can you guys help him just turn it off? Reset. Throughout history, okay, I'm getting ahead of myself and talking about how we view things. Okay, with our history, in all throughout the world, we have seen these sorts of things happening. We see certain people who are born into the right families, born with the favored skin color of that particular era, born with certain ideal genes, born perhaps into a family that's well-connected, born into maybe a more enlightened family, a smarter family, a more brilliant family. And what we see, right, this is regardless of country, regardless of era, age we live in, we see these people being successful, at least what we call successful. At least how we imagine it. Maybe that success, right, that blessing that we perceive, is their superior understanding of the world. Right? These are enlightened people. This is very much a part of our culture, whether we realize that or not. Maybe that blessing is financial. Maybe that blessing or that success is military success. Or maybe it's political connection. Now here are a couple of different ways the successful person might explain their success and the way we might explain people's success or blessing. Right? These are the things I'm talking about are things that we often think of as blessing or types of things. Some might claim, well, it is their hard work. It is their strategizing, right? It's the way they went about things. It's their superior grasp of something, right? They're smarter than other people. Right? And their voices drip with pride and arrogance. Their condescending tone rings in the ears of the losers. What does this voice tell the losers, the ones that we perceive to have not received the blessing? Well, you should have worked harder. Right? You messed your own life up. It's your fault. You are essentially a loser. You are the one who does not receive the blessings because you have failed. Right? This is why you've missed out on them. You are a loser. This is the it's up to me, the pull yourself up by the bootstraps sort of philosophy. Another group might explain their receiving blessings or maybe gaining blessings in a more fatalistic sort of a way. Fatalism is, well, there's nothing really that I did. This is just the way it is. My better genetics, my greater intelligence, my strengths, right, the family I was born into, the color of my skin, well, it's just all a part of destiny. I did not ask for any of it. In this person's mind, this is simply the way things are. There in this world, there are simply winners and then there are losers. Right? And we just have to accept that. And what does this voice then tell the one who loses, who does not receive the blessings, who does not receive the successes? You're out of luck. It's just too bad. You were dealt a bad hand. Get over it. You just didn't win the lottery. It's just the way things are. Here, the winner, right, regardless of how they deal, whether it's fatalism just is the way it is, or whether it's because I worked hard to receive it, the winner, friends, I want you to see clearly here, the winner does not hunger and thirst for righteousness. They do not thirst for things to be made right. Why? Because from their vantage point, from their point of view, everything is already right. This is the way it's supposed to work. Those who work hard receive blessings. Those who win the genetic lottery or whatever the lottery is, they are blessed. They just receive it. Right? Just fell into their laps. We just work hard for it. They are not meek. They are not humble. Right? They don't have to be. In fact, they're full of themselves. Why? Because they look at themselves as the winners, right? They look at the losers and they say, "Ah, it sucks to be you," or "you should have worked harder." They're not meek. And what is there to mourn? They do not mourn either. Why? Because everything is good with the world. Everything is as it should be. With these two different views, friends, the loser does not automatically become hungry for righteousness either. They do not necessarily show mercy. They do not live with meekness and humility. Right? When the world, when we adopt these sorts of philosophies, these ideas of how the world works, whether we are winners or losers, we still view things the same way. And this is why the loser doesn't necessarily just become the way Jesus desires us to be or tells us to be. If fatalism, this is just the way things are, there's nothing I can do about it. If this is their view, they will say, "Well, the world's just against me," and they'll pity themselves. Or they might just put their hope in fate. They might say, "Well, I'm just going to be optimistic. I'm going to think positively." If the person has the other philosophy, "Well, it's up to me. I have to make something of myself. I need to pull myself up by my bootstraps. Hard work is rewarded." Right? If they think that, then they will work hard. They will strategize. They will develop their skins. And they'll probably adopt other types of sayings that we are accustomed to. Right? The fatalist might say, "Well, just think positive." Right? Just hope for the best. The one who works hard has a different set of philosophies. It's go on the computer, Google quotes, and you'll find ones like this. "Believe in yourself," right? It's up to me. Just believe in yourself. Here's one I read this week. "Blessing," or "believing in yourself, is the secret to success." Here's another one. "Surround yourself with people who are going to lift you higher." Oprah Winfrey. I just like Oprah, by the way. And here's the one that I've heard that really rubs me the wrong way. Not because I'm so good, because I hear how it conflicts with what Jesus calls us to do. "Surround yourself with beautiful and positive people who love you and believe in you." Sometimes those quotes go more like, "Stay away from negative people." I hope it rubs you the wrong way too. But I'll show you how it should rub us the wrong way as Christians. Friends, God, through the Bible, through other believers, those we live with now, those who have lived with or lived before us, the great cloud of witnesses, and through the ongoing work of the Holy Spirit working on our hearts, is telling us, revealing to us, that things are not as they may seem. There is a bigger story that we are a part of as Christians, that we are in the middle of. And at the end of this story, the winners of the world will be the losers. And the losers in the world will be the winners. Things are not as they seem. This is why we need to be lifted above the fray, the conflict, the battles, above the tree lines, high above the river valley to see this. Right? To see this. So that we can see the bigger picture, the whole story, and ultimately where the story ends. Right, how the story ends, where we eventually end up, so that we can remain in the world. Why do we need to see the future? So that we can remain in the world. And when we face injustice, when we face abuse, our own weakness, we can remain hopeful and we can continue to care. We need that, right? Because the fatalist, the one who says, "Well, it's just the way things are," they just simply become indifferent. "There's nothing I can do. It's just the way it is." And so they are not necessarily hopeful unless they've achieved a certain level of positivity in their lives, right? But they're not going to care. And the person who says, "It's up to me," they will think, "Well, They're sort of, we can just solve our problems. So they're either going to go into the problem and sort of fix things, or they're going to say, we're going to work hard to get away from the problem. Neither one can be present in the creation amidst hardship, amidst difficulty, and remain hopeful and continue to care. Friends, all of the blessings that are mentioned here, comfort, fulfillment, wholeness, mercy, seeing God, called His children, and receiving His kingdom and the earth, where His kingdom is coming, and will eventually completely be here, are connected to us remaining, staying in the difficulty, whatever form it takes in our lives. This does not mean necessarily that we stay in the physical hardship, right? It doesn't mean we physically stay. An example of that would be an abusive relationship. This is not so that we can stay in an abusive relationship. That is not what this is talking about. Nor does it mean we stay in a country where a regime or a government treats us mercifully or mercilessly and unfair. There's no justice. What it means is not pretending as though it didn't happen and dealing with what did happen. I'm thinking about when there's a fire in a house, right? After the fire has been taken out, somebody has to go in there, right, and determine what caused the fire. Needs to go in the middle of it. And just like that, we have to go into, right? When we talk about hardships, we need to go into them and explore into the minds, into the emotions, into the past, our own or that of other people. This is why we need the Beatitudes. We need to, because we have to remain in the creation. We have to remain in this world in order to bring about the gospel, bring about the good news. The poor in spirit fully trust in God's mercy. They acknowledge their absolute need and dependence on the author of the story. They are not afraid of suffering, pain, past or present. They have full confidence in the Lord, the one who wrote the story, the one who has told them where the story is going. The meek are modest, they're humble, they're not prideful, and do not need to understand everything, all the ins and outs, why this is happening, what caused it, right? What caused this suffering. They do not need to understand all of those things. They are humble, they are meek. The merciful show mercy without discretion. Why? Because there's no person more undeserving of God's mercy and grace than themselves. Right? They understand at a deep level that hurting people hurt other people. They cannot get angry. They cannot fail to show mercy to the people we might think of as the worst people out there. In the morning, they don't pretend everything is fine. They do not feel the need to explain away the past or quiet those who share their pain right now. Instead, they mourn with them. They give them space. And friends, the peacemaker, in a way, in my mind, sort of captures it all. Right, we have peacekeepers. People keep the peace. People sort of shove things under the rug. Let's just move forward. Right, that person could be a fatalist. Well, it just is the way it is. Or they could be the pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of a person. We're just going to press forward. Blessed is the peacemaker. The peacemaker, understanding that all of us have a past that needs to be dealt with in order to move forward, makes space for conflict that has not been resolved, for relationships that need to be mended. Growing up, when we got a tear in our pants, which seemed to happen fairly often, it was my grandmother who stitched them back together. She was good at it. The stitches held. Now, if you are a seamstress, you are a sewer, you may correct me, do it after the service. There are a couple of different stitches. And my grandmother would do what I understand to be called the back stitch. There's a running stitch, and then there's the back stitch. So the running stitch is much faster. You move forward the whole time, right? It's just a constant moving forward through connecting the two seams. That is the stitch that I think I used when I tried to mend my own pants. Yes, I did try. It's faster. It's saves a lot of time. The back stitch is a bit different, though. As you go forward, but then you go back. You go forward, and then you go back. Forward, and then back. So it's a constant forward and back motion. But it makes for a much stronger theme. Human beings, friends, are inclined to live like the running stitch. We run from conflict. We run from pain. Right? It is said that this is a survival instinct sort of a thing. And this is how human beings have made it to 2020. Right? It's through these instincts. Right? We run away from pain. We run away from conflict. We run away, essentially, from danger. But we don't... Sorry. That's the way we are. We always move forward when it comes to hurts. We like to avoid them. And we don't like to deal with old conflicts because it's hard, it's messy, it's time-consuming, and it's draining. It's not efficient. We want to move forward. We do not want to sit in the pain. And oftentimes, what as human beings find is that when we go back into those old wounds, those old hurts, it actually leads to more heartache initially. And we say, well, why would we do this? Right? The fatalist is, well, it's just the way things, let's not deal with that. Let's just move forward, right? It is the way it is. Let's just go on. And the one who wants to work hard says, you know what? That's not efficient. Let's just move forward. Right? The gospel says something very different to us. Friends, when we live as a people poor in spirit, with meekness, when we live as a people who mourn, a people who show mercy without discretion, we become a part of Jesus stitching the tears between people. And it's not a running stitch. It's a back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Sometimes it's two steps back even. It's never just a constant motion forward. When we live this way as Jesus' people, we are stitching the tears between people in our communities, in our families, our churches, between neighbors, couples, siblings, generations in the church. Tears between governments and their people. Tears between nations and tribes and people. When we live this way, friends, we are applying the gospel. We are living the gospel. Later in the Beatitudes, Jesus talks about the road that is narrow. He says the road to life is narrow in chapter 7. Meaning it is more difficult. Meaning it runs against the grains of the world. Right? The grains of the world tell us, no, avoid it, move forward. And our own grains, right, averse to conflict, wanting to avoid extra heartache, we're also, right, this runs against our grain. And because it runs against the grain of ourselves and the world, the rewards are limited. Right, it's very difficult for us to receive the blessedness that is talked about here. Right? Instead, we often feel conflicted. We feel unsure. We hear other people saying, no, don't do that. Right? See, I told you so. I told you that it wasn't worth your while going there, helping that person, going into that part of your history, your past. This, friends, is simply the way that people live who have put their hope in Jesus. That people have been lifted above the fray and see where this is all headed. This is how they live. People having put their hope in Jesus. Jesus who's showing great mercy, desiring a good life for each of us. Right? He was mocked for His ways. He was persecuted. He was crucified. He was labeled the loser of losers. But because that is not how the world actually works, right? The way God actually created it to work, right? He battled and beat the forces that have brought the suffering into the world, stitching the tear between Himself and us, securing for us a future. So that we, friends, can enjoy deep everlasting happiness and joy. You get a taste of that now, but that is what we'll ultimately experience for eternity. Deep satisfaction of who we are. A time where we'll look in the mirror, we won't see everything wrong with ourselves, we'll see who God created us to be. We'll see beauty, we'll see who we actually are. deep satisfaction with who we are in the world around us. A life rich in relationships and purpose, shalom and peace. This is the life that the gospel brings to us. This is the life that the gospel brings to all people when we live the gospel out. Doing the backstitch. Forward and back, forward and back. Bringing about restoration, bringing about healing. Friends, it's this perspective that Jesus gives us, lifting us above the fray, above the tree line, above the building, so we can look down and see where we are going. It's this that helps us to live more freely today. Applying the gospel and living out the gospel. Let's pray. As we leave this place this morning, Jesus, may we not leave with a misunderstanding of what you're saying here. Yeah, our ideas, our notions of how the world works, it's up to us, or it's just the way things are, these things are built into us, and we do not simply overcome them. So we are aware that as we leave this place, and even as we hear your word this morning, that's still part of us, and it takes a while for your truths to work their way to right our thinking that has gone wrong. May you continue to work the message of the Beatitudes into our hearts, into our minds as we leave this place. May we continue to ponder and think about what this means. What you are calling us to who you are calling us to be, and to be on guard for where we fall into those ditches where we think it's up to us, or the ditches where we think, well, there's nothing I can do. You've saved us. You've given us. You've made us heirs of your kingdom, heirs of this earth, co-heirs with you. This is true. And with that comes a certain way of living. Help us to understand the relationship between being saved, being freed from sin, and following you. This is our prayer, Jesus, and we pray it in your precious name. Amen.